Hello and welcome to Kind to Your Mind. We're looking at how physical fitness can help mental well-being. Someone who knows all about that is my next guest. She is a three-time world champion, won an Olympic bronze in London, and a six-time European champion. She received an MBE in 2010 following a career at the top of the sport. Welcome to Kind to Your Mind, Beth Tweddle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Let's talk about the present first of all, before we look at your experience as an Olympian and world champion. We're starting to come out of lockdown slowly now at the time of recording this. What has been your personal experiences staying at home, particularly with a toddler gaining mobility by the day?
Oh, she is, yes. Do you know what? I look back on it now and you think, where is that time gone? And I think I was speaking to a few of my friends about it, and I think how I approached it is kind of how I approached it when I was a gymnast, right? There's something different to deal with. What can I do to adapt to that? So whether it was obviously creating a new routine for myself, because I really like to kind of have a routine in my life. So from sort of day one, actually, I'm really lucky, we've got a garden. So I started taking my daughter just walking around the garden for half an hour. And then I progressed that to sort of going out and going for a walk around near our house, and just kind of creating myself goals for each day. So I love a tick list. I don't know how many people listening love a tick list, but that satisfaction of being able to cross something out that you've actually done something. So by the end of the day, you could kind of see that you'd achieved something. So I think Freya obviously has put a smile on my face every day, and it's been really nice because obviously I've been at home. I've been able to kind of see this part of her development, which I would have seen, but she had actually started nursery. So obviously you may have missed bits. She started walking now. She climbs on anything and everything. So I guess I look on the positive side of, do you know what? I'm getting to spend so much more time with her. And also my husband's in and out of his office, so he's getting to spend a lot of time with her as well.
It sounds like you're taking the positives from the situation.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously it's been really hard. I'm very close with my family and obviously close with Andy's family as well. They used to come down at least once a week to see Freya and obviously to see her grow. So we've obviously had to adapt that, being FaceTiming and WhatsApp calling, so that also for them, so that they don't miss out on her development. So yeah, I've just been taking loads of photos, loads of videos, keeping friends updated, and we've done loads of quizzes, and yeah, just, do you know what, we've probably been more social as a couple with our friends than what we are when it's not locked down, because you kind of go, actually, we're gonna do something every Saturday night, and it's not always a quiz. Sometimes it is literally we just put the Zoom on and we just have a chat, or the other week we played Articulate, which is basically a describing game, so we had a lot of fun with that. So yeah, we've just found different ways of doing it, and like you say, it's trying to take those positives. It is a really hard time not being able to see family and friends, but it's not going to last forever. And the fact that we're obviously, there's a reason why we're doing it. And I think I always have to keep going back to that. If, don't get me wrong, I've had hard days where I'm like, I just want to go and see my mum or my dad, and I just want to get out with my friends and stuff. So I think you always have to look on the positives and just know that there's a reason why we're doing this, and we will come out the other side.
I think as well, right from the very start, even in the depths of the major part of the lockdown, being able to get out and have exercise was obviously something that was acknowledged by the government. It was the one thing that we were allowed to get out and do initially, yeah, was to have that hour of exercise or what have you. How have you been keeping yourself physically fit? Because being an Olympic gymnast, you must have a very big amount of physical activity and all the rest of it. And whilst I don't expect you've been quite to that level,
no.
how have you been keeping your day-to-day physical activity going?
Yeah, so I've done a mixture of things. We're lucky that we've got our bikes. So my husband and I take it in turns to kind of go and take our bikes out. Obviously, someone stays at home with Freya. My sister-in-law is a trained PT, so every Saturday she does a virtual boot camp. So there's loads of us that log on and do a virtual boot camp. So that was a really nice way of kind of keeping in touch with my brother and my sister-in-law and kind of some of her family and friends. And then every morning, myself and Freya go for that walk for, it takes probably about 45, 50 minutes. And I had, rather than putting her in the pram, I've got her in a sling. So, I try to vary it. I get really bored just doing exactly the same thing. So some days it's with my bike, some days it's just going for a walk, some days it's just doing some core activities. Within my own company, obviously we weren't able to do gymnastics lessons live. So we've been keeping the gymnasts entertained and swimmers, because we've got a sister company that is swimming as well, with online content. And every Saturday they got a Saturday shake up, which was basically a workout with either myself or Rebecca Adlington. So I've been filming them. So that keeps me busy. So yeah, just trying to do lots of different things.
We are really lucky as well. I mean, we mentioned the exercise, but I think exercise and technology really have saved a lot of people's mental well-being, haven't they? I mean, what things have you found? I mean, you mentioned Zoom there, but what things have you found that have really helped you out through this in terms of that kind of thing?
I think the WhatsApp call. So if people have got a smartphone, that's a really easy one to do. And you can connect, I think it's 3 or 4 people on a call on that. But also with Zoom, like my husband's parents, they'd never use Zoom. So I literally got on a call with them and walked them through it. And before we did the quiz as a family, I kind of did a practice quiz with them so that they were comfortable using it before doing the actual quiz. So I think it's just walking them through it stage by stage, and it does make a huge difference. I mean, I normally talk to my mum and dad pretty much every other day anyway, but that's kind of been my one big thing that's kept me sane, I guess, and kept me happy, is seeing my mum and dad at the end of the phone, and also seeing Andy's parents and seeing the joy on their faces of just, I literally just hold the phone and they just watch Freya walking around. I think half the time they're only phoning to see her.
You're listening to the Kind to Your Mind podcast. I'm Ian Brannan and we're in conversation with Beth Tweddle, 3-time world champion. You got the Olympic bronze in London, 6-time European champion. Your accolades go on, Beth. But going back to your career as a gymnast, and you've, at the very, very top level, you can't get any higher than where you've been performing. How does the physical fitness that you have also support your mental well-being? And that's something that's particularly important at this time.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, I've always been sporty since a young age and always been very, very active. But I do find days now where you're like, oh, do I really want to take my bike out? Do I really? And then, do you know what? As soon as I take my bike out, you get that bit of fresh air, you get a bit of time to yourself, and then you come back and you do feel kind of revitalized and re-energized, and you've just kind of dusted the cobwebs away. So I do recommend it to people. It can be anything, just a 5-10 minute walk, just to get some fresh air, just to sometimes have that bit of freedom.
As a sports person, how do you manage the stress and pressure that you might be under? Because that might be something that people can relate to if they are working on the front line as a key worker and they're feeling quite stressed and pressured at the moment for whatever reason, or maybe now that things are still going on for so long and there seems to be no end to the situation with coronavirus. Are there any tips that people can take from your experience in that situation on how they can maybe free their mind slightly?
When I was competing, obviously, I always had that long-term goal, but it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's creating those short-term goals. So you don't just look at that big picture, because at the minute, I think a lot of people are kind of sitting there going, when is this going to end? When are we going to be able to get back to the new normal? And because that is an unknown factor, it may feel like it's a lifetime away, whereas actually, is there something that people can do to create their own little short-term goals on that journey. So whether that's creating their own workout plan or creating a timetable to be able to speak to people, or now that obviously social distancing and the rules have relaxed, can they go and see people and create, right, I'm going to go and see so many people a week. Or so I think there's little things that you can do so that you've got something to look forward to, but also trying to take your mind off it. Is there a hobby that you really enjoy? Looking at what normally makes you happy within your life, and can you adapt during this time to recreate that? And for me, it's having those challenges. So that's what's helped me keep motivated through this period. Always looking into your own life. What is it that you can do that you have full control over? So whether that is creating a quiz or meeting friends or getting out on your exercise, how many times can you do that a week? Or it's controlling those controllables within your life.
You're used to having coaches around you as a professional athlete. Are your friends now comparable to that in that they are a strong support network?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm very lucky that my support network has kind of continued what it was throughout my gymnastics career. And a lot of my best friends were gymnasts as well. So we've all got quite a similar mindset in that way. But then I've also got kind of my husband on the other side, that he's a totally different character to me. I like my tit list. I like things done in certain ways, and he's a lot more laid back. So I think that kind of balances us out throughout the week.
It's interesting because of all the sports people we've had on this series, that routine and lists and all that, it seems to be a common theme.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I think because obviously when you're competing, you're doing everything you can to strive to be the best that you can, and that's obviously being at training on time, doing the training itself to 100%, and then obviously what can you do around your life, whether that is your social aspect or getting the physio or the nutrition or the emotional support, what else is it you can do to ensure that you're able to perform to your best? So I guess, yeah, having that support network around you, but also having that, I don't know, perfectionist mindset, I guess, is what helped me achieve when I was training.
Yeah, I guess what I'm driving at, I suppose, is that, you know, you're so used to dealing with challenges on a daily basis. Yeah. And you must see what's presented in front of you. And you just, like you say, you're mentioning that you're taking things in small steps and you're just breaking it down in that same way.
Definitely. And I think everyone will be able to relate to something in their lives, whether it's through school, whether it's university or work, where they've been presented with a problem. And at first you sit there and go, no idea how I'm going to solve that. But you then obviously bounce ideas around colleagues or pupils, whatever environment they're in, and you start to come up with solutions. There's, for me, there's never just a problem. There's going to be obstacles in the way, but there's always solutions around that. And I guess I've kind of learned to use that mentality for all parts of my life.
What's the best piece of advice that you've been given, either in your professional life or just generally, you know, everyday life, that's really helped you in terms of well-being and keeping yourself and your mind focused?
I think is enjoy what you do. For me, that was the main reason I was able to continue doing gymnastics for as long as I did. I just loved what I did, and don't get me wrong, there was definitely hard days, but I never saw gymnastics training as a chore. And I'm very lucky now that I've now got a career where I'm combining gymnastics, which is obviously my passion, and also working with children, which I just love doing. So again, I just don't see what I do as a chore. I just enjoy it every day. So I guess that's the one thing I would always say to people, is find something that you love, whether that's obviously during this time, is there something that you maybe did as a kid that was a hobby of yours and you maybe could actually start doing that again, or a way of reconnecting with friends that you used to do that hobby with. So yeah, definitely something that you enjoy, find that one thing that you just love. For my husband, he's a huge Liverpool fan. So that was his thing, obviously. He's a season ticket holder, so going off to watch the matches, and he's done it since he was 4 years old with his nan, and that kind of is his really special thing.
This is the Kind to Your Mind podcast, and in this episode we're looking at physical activity and mental well-being with the gymnast Beth Tweddle, who has performed at the highest level, world champions, performed in the Olympics, of course, Commonwealth Games, European Championships, massively performed on the highest level on the biggest stage of gymnastics. And Beth, we've talked about managing your mental state, really, and breaking things down into small bits and having a routine and all that kind of stuff. But here's a question: that what happens when things don't go your way unexpectedly? You may have put all the work in, you may have put the best plan in, but as you know, especially in gymnastics, things can take an unexpected turn very quickly. But how do you cope with those setbacks?
Do you know what, that's an interesting question, because throughout my career things didn't always go right, and I think people watch you at the Olympics when it all goes to plan, you pick up your medal, and they don't see that kind of heartache and the failure along the way. And one thing that I was taught very young was failure is not really a thing, because actually by making mistakes you learn so much from it. So I think that really helped me from a young age, was, do you know what, you can do all the practice in the world, but we are human and mistakes will happen. So I always, if I didn't quite go to plan at competition, for the first 24 hours I was a bear with a sore head, please don't talk to me, the world was ending kind of thing. And then by the next morning I'd woken up and I was ready to get back in the gym and work on what didn't go right. There was one moment in my career that didn't happen, and that was Beijing. My plan was to retire after Beijing. After 2004 Olympics, I'd kind of gone there, I'd been an Olympian, and a dream was born to become an Olympic medalist. So for the next 4 years, that's kind of what I worked towards. And I went out to Beijing, I had one of the hardest routines in the world. I made it into the final, I did the routine, and as I landed the dismount I took a step, and I just knew straight away that step had cost me everything with regards to the medal. And I ended up placing fourth, and I was 0.025 away from the medal. And normally with a competition, if things didn't go right, within 24 hours I was back in the gym, and just a mindset of it's happened, I've learnt from it and I can move on. But that one really got me, and for I'd say a good month I was cursing myself over it. I kept replaying it over in my head. I just could not lay it to bed. I couldn't put it away at all. And to be honest, my coach didn't know whether I would retire. She didn't know whether I'd come back in. And I flew home from Beijing devastated. But obviously as a team, the whole of Great Britain had done really, really well. So when we landed in Heathrow, there was kind of a media frenzy. Everyone wanted to say well done to me, and it's amazing you've come fourth. But deep down, I was just hurting. It didn't feel like I had succeeded. I mean, obviously now you look at it and think, do you know what, fourth is still an amazing achievement, but it wasn't what I'd set out to do. So I came home, spent some 2 days with my friend who I lived with, and just said, how quickly can you get time off work? I need to go on holiday kind of thing. So we flew out pretty much the next day on holiday. And halfway through that holiday, I just literally said to her, I can't give up. And she turned around and said, do you know what? We all knew that. We just needed you to kind of have that time to realise that. So after that holiday, I spoke with Amanda, who was my coach, and just said, I want to continue. I can't give up after Beijing, having finished fourth. I would love to try for London 2012. And yeah, I mean, it took me, I'd say, a good month. And even to this day, it's still one of those moments that I I just can't put into words the heartache that I felt that night. Coming home into that Olympic Village, knowing that you were so close but so far away, it really did break my heart. And I guess that's the one moment that I have always found it really hard to move on from. But after that month, I spent a lot of time with my family and friends and just kind of refound that love for gymnastics and realised why I did it. And the reason why I did it was because I loved it. So once that was back again, I was back in the gym and working towards London 2012, but it was still another 4 years away. So I still go back to that. You've got a long-term goal. I never openly admitted that that was my long-term goal. I think everyone knew it. But I didn't want to tempt fate. I didn't want to tell people that. So I always broke it down into short-term goals. I've got a world championships in 6 months, and then 6 months later it's Europeans. And I just continued the next 4 years like that. So I guess I'm saying to people is, do you know what? Sometimes it's okay to say you're not okay. And I used my family and my friends so much during that time. I spent a lot of time just going back to my parents' house, being with my dog. I say my dog, it's my mum and dad's dog, but just taking her on walks and spending time with my friends. They knew that I was hurting. And just having that network around me just really helped me. So I guess I'm just saying to people is it's okay to not be okay. And sometimes you don't need to say that. People around you will know that. And just them being around you will help you. And I guess for some people that will be now. People may have lost loved ones and will be struggling because they've maybe not been able to see them. And family members or friends around them are not knowing what to do. But actually just being on the end of a phone or sending them a picture or sending them a message, just saying here for you, thinking of you, can really make a huge difference to someone.
It's interesting there then, in that time, you know, that lowest moment there after Beijing, there it was your friends and family you turned to bring you out of it.
And my coach, Amanda, because she'd gone through that same journey. But I've got a small, I wouldn't say I've got a huge network of people, but even to this day, it's the same people. So Amanda, my coach, even to now, if I just need a rant and just need someone to pick up the phone and have a bit of a rant and a rave to, I'm quite happy to pick up the phone to her. And the same with my mum and dad and my three best friends. So, yeah, I've got a small network of people, but that network has stayed the same throughout my whole career and then obviously into the new chapter of my life without competitive elite sport. And there's been just as many challenges outside of sport as there was when there was sport. Obviously, they're very different challenges. Obviously, when it was competing, it was either you've not quite achieved the result you wanted or you picked up an injury. And obviously now it can be, I don't know, I'm having a hard day in the office or you're just having a hard day in general. So I've still got that same network of people that I'm quite happy to pick up a phone to. And I know that I can pick up the phone to them any time of day or night, and they will always come back to me.
But after that disappointment in 2008, I think disappointments are putting it lightly from what you were just saying there. There was a lot of success after that, though, because you were talking about maybe retiring after Beijing. I mean, from 2009, 2010 up to 2012, you know, you achieved a lot of medals and a lot of great times too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is one thing that people can take away from it. Do you know what? There will be times when you're feeling like everything's going wrong or that things just aren't going to plan, but things will always come back up again. So it may feel like the end of the world at that moment, but there's ways around it. As long as you're willing to kind of face what it is that's not quite going right, you're willing to open up to people and get that help and support that you need, you will and can come back out the other side and achieve what it is you want to achieve. And for me, it was starting off with those smaller goals of just getting back in the gym, just getting back fit and getting that love for the sport again. And then off the back of that, obviously things started to thrive. And you're right, it was the most successful 4 years of my career, becoming kind of 3 times world champion, 6 times European champion, being able to compete in front of a home crowd at an Olympic Games, which was an absolute dream come true. And obviously the icing on the cake for that was picking up that Olympic medal. That, do you know what? I believe everything happened for a reason. And Beijing, although it was the hardest part of my career, had I achieved a medal then, would I have continued into London? I honestly don't know. But to be able to stand on that medal podium in London with a medal around your neck and having that home crowd around you meant everything.
Personal achievements aside, in terms of like becoming a mum and all the rest of it, I mean, where does getting that medal at 2012 in London rank, really?
Do you know what? From a gymnastics perspective, it definitely holds a special place in my heart, because I trained for 20 years for that, and it was that up and down journey to get there. I was obviously lucky enough to go to 3 Olympic Games, but knowing what I went through in Beijing, to be able to kind of pull yourself back out of that and continue into London 2012, it did mean everything. But from a gymnastics perspective, without all the other medals prior to that, so becoming a European and world champion, that London medal wouldn't have been possible. So people always say, is that the one standout medal? And yes, in a way, because obviously it took so long, and every athlete who has the Olympics would love to have an Olympic medal, but I still hold all of those other medals with just as much value, because without them, that Olympic one wouldn't have been possible.
The London one really is the end of that journey of 4 years, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah. To the present day then, you've been busy helping others. You've done a recent cycle ride to raise funds for Alderhay these days, as well as doing your own thing, which you mentioned earlier. You've got your own business, which obviously teaches youngsters gymnastics, and you mentioned there's a swimming aspect to that as well. Volunteering, though, is something that I think a lot of people have been getting involved in more and more over this lockdown period, because maybe some people have got extra time on their hands. This is something you would heartily encourage, I imagine.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the reason behind the Alderhay Cycle, I'm a patron for them, and obviously a lot of charities have had a lot of their fundraising events cancelled, whether it was things like the London Marathon, which have obviously been postponed, and other kind of balls or charity events. So I think for me, I wanted to get out and on my bike anyway. I kind of saw on Alderhay's Twitter that they were doing this cycle, and I thought, do you know what, that's great for me. It gives me a challenge to do. And I was just talking to some people in work about it, and we actually decided as a team that we were going to do it. And it created that team morale. I think the one thing now that people are working remotely is they're missing that banter within the office. So it started to create that remotely, which was really nice to see. People were sending pictures in, they were sending in screenshots of their Stravas, of how far they had gone and stuff. So it was really nice. It started to create that community again. So I guess I would just say to people, look, if you can volunteer in any loads of different ways, and it might just be a case of volunteering through obviously the NHS, we're doing a huge campaign to get people volunteering through that, but also just within your local community. Is there anyone that needs help with their food and shopping? Are they shielding, or are they in that vulnerable category? But also when I do my walk, I see people that maybe live by themselves, and just having that chat with them for 5 or 10 minutes can, I guess, really make a difference. I can't imagine if I was just living on my own and not seeing anyone or talking to anyone, what that would be like. So I think if I went on my walk, I'd really appreciate someone just kind of stopping and chatting to you, obviously keeping that social distance.
Yeah, I think we are noticing as well, people that you pass in the street at a safe distance and so on, or even passing your house or whatever, that people do seem to be a little bit more social than they were anyway. And I hope that's maybe something that continues.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think people are aware that you're maybe not getting out as much as you would, or you're not going to the office to see you, that have that usual conversation. So, no, I find myself, if you do pass someone in the street, I do try and strike up a conversation. And obviously some people don't want to, and that's absolutely fine as well. But I think just by saying hello can make a difference to someone's day.
And finally, and before we, as we wrap things up on this, what would you say to someone if they did come to you, be it a friend or otherwise, that's saying that they were struggling a little bit with their mental health in some form or another? What would you say to them?
For me, it's talk. Find someone you trust, have that conversation. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a face-to-face conversation or a telephone conversation. It could just be a text message. Obviously, for me, I'm very lucky. I've got that support network of friends. And even during this time, you can tell when someone's maybe not themselves, and they're maybe not replying as much as they would normally, or they're replying with a slightly different tone on the text messages or something. So just by sending a text to them saying, "Are you okay?" it can really start to open up that conversation. And obviously, if you are worried about someone, maybe broach it, but don't push it. As long as they know that you're around, we'll come to you when they're ready. But sometimes people just need that bit of time to kind of gather their own thoughts. But as long as you just obviously keep in touch with them, keep contacting them, and vice versa, if you're feeling not 100%, just try and find that person. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily have to be the person that you're closest to. Sometimes it's easier to maybe talk to someone that's a friend, but maybe not one of your best friends, because you just feel a bit more comfortable. Everyone's completely different.
Okay, it's great advice, and it's been really nice talking to you, Beth. I'm sure that anybody listening to this will have taken something from it. Not least your story of coming back from that disappointment in Beijing to achieve an Olympic gold in your home Olympics. You know, it's a fantastic story, and I was gripped listening to that as well. And thanks for your insight.
Not a problem. And I think it's just saying to guys, do you know what? Please just keep safe, keep active, and know that people are out there to help you if you need it.
Thank you to Beth Tweddle there for joining us on Kind to Your Mind. Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed it too. We always love hearing from you, so please leave us a comment, and don't forget to hit subscribe and rate the podcast. This series is in conjunction with your local councils and the NHS in Cheshire and Merseyside. For more information, visit kindtoyourmind.org, where you'll find lots of information and resources, including top tips from the Every Mind Matters campaign and ALMA, an online wellbeing portal for those living and working in Cheshire and Merseyside. Until next time on Kind to Your Mind, stay safe and goodbye.